Are you out of work and needing money to buy food? This area's biggest food bank is here to help. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, how you can get some food right away and how you can support efforts to feed the most vulnerable people in our area in the midst of crisis. Give us a call right now with your questions. It's 549-2937. Then later, why Chinese Americans on the First Coast say they're concerned about bullying and even violence against their community in this pandemic. But first, this hour, the latest for you this Monday morning on the COVID crisis. In its Sunday evening update, the Florida Department of Health reported 19,895 cases of COVID in the state. That's 909 more than they reported Saturday night. The death toll in Florida is at 461 with 2,672 hospitalizations. Jacksonville area cases now total 1,098. That's an increase of 44 cases over the weekend. Meanwhile, COVID testing at Lot J in downtown Jacksonville is now under state control. And here's another change. You can now get tested if you've simply had close contact with a positive person. That's even if you don't have any symptoms. If you go to the testing site today, you'll see that the Florida National Guard is handling testing at the site. They have the goal of testing 400 people there a day. There is also testing going on at the Prime Osborne Convention Center and at a number of local hospitals. Now, unemployment, as we all know, has skyrocketed as people are staying at home and not patronizing businesses. Thousands of businesses have closed their doors, and there is just a huge number of people out of work right now. Florida residents who are struggling, of course, have to eat. What are they going to do? Well, that's where this area's biggest food bank comes in. They are facing an unprecedented challenge right now. And we're going to get some details out to our listeners this morning. With more about the food crisis, we welcome Susan King. She is CEO of Feeding Northeast Florida. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
It's so good to have you on the show. And here's our question to callers. Are you unemployed? Do you need food? Do you want to help Feeding Northeast Florida? Do you have questions about the food system and the food supply chain? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org. Tweets to at Melissa N. Jax. And our Facebook page is open. So tell us what's happening now at Feeding Northeast Florida, the largest food bank in this region. You serve a multi-county area.
Well, it's been a unique few weeks. As you know, our food supply is primarily through grocery recovery. We pick up from over 200 stores every week. And as you saw the shelves, and our listeners saw the shelves bare, that's what became available to our food bank. We've always supplemented with a what we call our purchase program, where we source a primarily shelf-stable from brokers around the country. And we buy it by the truckload, never to this magnitude. But we early on figured out those bare shelves were going to lead to a lack of food supply. So we kind of created a pipeline of trucks coming in over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So we've been able to provide shelf-stable. We're building family boxes in lieu of the grocery recovery that we had before. We are still seeing a substantial amount of produce coming in because the restaurants are not taking that produce. And so that supply chain, as most people have read about, has been significantly disrupted. So we've just figured out how to pivot and work towards making food available just in a different model than we were accustomed to.
What are your biggest needs right now, Susan?
You know, because of the change in the food supply and the fact that we're having to go buy food, you know, to an extent that we've never done before, financial support is really important. We have a virtual food drive going because we don't want people going to grocery stores and acquiring food for us. That just empties the shelves for those who need it. You know, looking for those SNAP recipients who are now going to be able to shop online, we want those store shelves to be full.
Yeah,
and because
of course.
We're buying wholesale from brokers. Yeah, we don't want people going out. It's this crazy conundrum. So a virtual food drive has been a really effective way for people to help us.
And how does that work? How does the virtual food drive work?
You know, you could just go to our website and under donate, it'll say virtual food drive, and you can just make a dollar donation. It kind of converts it to this is how many family boxes we can provide at a certain dollar level of support. And so, you know, any amount, however small, however great, goes right back into us sourcing food to provide to the community.
Okay, and if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Susan King, who runs Feeding Northeast Florida, we want to hear from you. Have you lost your job? Have you had trouble putting food on the table? Do you have questions about the food supply chain and what's going on with it right now, the disruptions we're seeing? We'll go to your calls in a moment. The number to join us is 549-2937. So, okay, tell us about the bigger picture, how you're experiencing the food supply chain right now and some of the workarounds that you're trying to make happen. Because the normal way of moving food through the system has been disrupted, hasn't it?
Dramatically. A dramatic difference and a shift. So the way we're approaching it now, because we don't want people to gather in large numbers and we're working through the city to eliminate those kinds of massive food drives that we've read about in the news, we're doing primarily mobile pantries through our existing network of partners. Now that network, which totaled about 250 pre-COVID, is down to 87 right now. A lot of the organizations that we work through are smaller churches, small pantry operations who have just had to close up for a variety of reasons, many of which relate to their volunteers' age. But the 87 that we have still going are going strong, and we've more than probably about 2.5 times our normal pantry distributions, mobile pantries we've scheduled for the month of April. And those are, we bring truckloads primarily of boxed family meals and produce, and they're handed out through through their network in a no-touch, low-touch model. You know, you've seen the lines of people driving through to eliminate that contact. So we're doing that. I think we have 105 of those scheduled during the month of April, and we'll continue to ramp those up. But they're not broadly advertised. What we ask people to do is to look at our website, and there's a constantly updated list of active agencies. Look for one in your area, and then contact them, and they will be able to tell you how best, what their hours are, when the distributions will be, because a lot of times these things are changing. They're changing daily, and so it's really best, rather than putting some broad announcement out that draws 10,000 automobiles, as happened in San Antonio last week when they were prepared for 400.
Well, no, wait. What happened in San Antonio?
Yes. In San Antonio, they had over 10,000 people show up for a pantry that normally would be about 400. So, I mean, that's what they're seeing around the country.
And are you seeing that in Jacksonville, long lines of people lining up to get food at the pantries?
Yeah, well, I think that there have been a couple of distributions through another organization that drew those kind of crowds because they were advertised that way. That's why we ask for people to look at a list of operating pantries in your area and contact them so that we kind of keep people not coming in mass. The city is really, really working hard to eliminate those kinds of crowds. And we're complying. We're just trying to look at workarounds for a lot of these things. One of the things that we've done to help the senior population is we created a program with a number of local restaurants that we're up to producing 5,000 meals a day, which are being distributed through our Council on Aging, through our senior HUD facilities. And these are meals that are going directly to seniors, this most vulnerable population that we don't want to be out and about. So we're, you know, every day looking for new ways to get food to people in need without drawing these huge crowds. It's a challenge.
Absolutely. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Susan King, who runs Feeding Northeast Florida. What are your questions about how to get food? As Susan said, you can go to her website, feedingnefl.org, and just click on the Get Help button. If you don't have internet access, you can give them a call And their number is 513-1333. And if you want to connect here with us, give us a call right now at 549-2937. Can you also tell us, Susan, about your partnerships with local restaurants and caterers? Because, of course, people that work in that aspect of the food system have been dramatically harmed by the crisis as well.
Absolutely. We started with the Black Sheep Group, reached out to us, and John was very concerned about his employees, and we just put our heads together. This was when the TPC donated the food that was not going to be used at the tournament to us. So we suddenly had this truckload or multiple truckloads of commercial-sized food and no real way to distribute it. And so we put our heads together and came up with a plan to find private funding to support some restaurant workers at about $10 an hour as independent contractors utilizing their kitchens. And we provided the food and the distribution mechanism. So we knew that we were safely handling food, we were safely preparing food, and we were using something that we didn't have any other means of distribution through. So we made this food available to our congregate feeding sites like Salzbacher and City Rescue and those places, but it was not something we could hand out to families. So we started producing meals. We added other restaurants as we found additional funding sources, and we had our first distribution of paychecks last week and paid 73 restaurant employees, which I'm so proud.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic.
Yes, in addition, Florida Blue came on board, and they have allowed us to use the facility there at their Deerwood campus, and they have maintained their own food service employees on staff at their expense, and they are working with us. So our current output is about 5,000 meals a day, and those are finding their way into our community and into the hands of seniors who need it so desperately.
And we want to hear from you if you're in need or you have questions for Susan King of Feeding Northeast Florida. Give us a call. It's 549-2937 as we talk about getting food to people that need it most right now in the COVID crisis. We're getting a lot of questions for you on our Facebook page, Susan. Here's one from Lisa. What about the waste farmers are dealing with now that schools and restaurants are closed? We're hearing that they have no choice but to dump food, produce, and milk. Now, that has been one of the most heartbreaking aspects of this whole ordeal, is seeing this. There are so many horrible things we could talk about, but this is one of them. Farmers can't get their produce to market, and people aren't getting enough food to eat. And so what's your experience with this?
Well, it's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And we luckily work with Feeding Florida, which is our Association of Florida Food Banks. And we have funds that come through the state budget to acquire produce from Florida farmers, specifically for Florida farmers. And we are consistently getting in truckloads of food that we are purchasing from these farmers. It's not at full retail, but so we have a pipeline of that. There's really no way for us to access all that is currently available or is being wasted, but we are, you know, actively doing our part in acquiring whatever produce we can from local farmers.
Just doing whatever you can.
A big part of our distribution. Yeah, we're bringing them in as fast as we can and distributing them out. You know, another part of this puzzle that's so difficult is we rely so heavily on volunteers. That's really the lifeblood of our organization in packing and distributing and sorting. And now under the social distancing rules, in addition to people just not being able to volunteer, we have probably a 75% reduction in our volunteers. So we've got a program that we're starting. We just actually tested it out last week, where we brought in boxes of produce, mixed produce that we're buying. I mean, everything we're doing right now, we're buying. But this way, we can eliminate some of that volunteer effort, and we can get it out much more quickly into the hands of families and in a low-touch model. So, you know, there's this whole process of learning and shifting and figuring this out and trying to get it right. But the truckloads are coming in, and we are distributing as fast as we can.
Right. As soon as the food comes in, it goes right back out. Here's an email for you from Karen. She's in McClenny. She says, are you helping food insecure residents in Baker County? You are, aren't you? Your range is pretty vast.
We are. And, you know, this has been a bit of a trick, too, is that as these agencies have closed, we've got a couple of counties that have very little agency representation right now. But so we've established relationships with the EOCs, the emergency ops centers. And in Baker County, we're working through the sheriff's department there and with the Council on Aging. And we are bringing weekly truckloads into them for distribution, both senior meals and produce and family boxes. So we're trying to find a good, strong government outpost in each one of the counties as we lose agency support. We're doing the same thing in Flagler, have a very significant operation going on in Clay County, and they're doing great work. We've recently had the state begin to release MREs and water that were being held for the hurricane season we faced, but we're now starting to distribute those.
Really? Meals ready to eat are being handed out. Wow.
Yeah, they are. You know, we're just trying to create support in these counties where there's more distance, more time, and less agencies available. So, you know, so that we're ready for whatever comes.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Susan King, CEO of Feeding Northeast Florida. You can go to their website now at feedingnefl.org. If you need to find a food bank near you, their phone number is also there on the website. And we want your calls here. It's 549-2937 to join us. You know, this whole crisis, Susan, there's been a lot of discussion about this. It has laid bare the inequities in our food system overall. And now for the first time, maybe in a lot of people's lives, they're being exposed to this in a real way. I know it's always been difficult in the past to communicate to people who are well off and never have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, how food insecurity is such a desperate issue for millions of Americans. Now, millions more of us are having to face this same desperation. It's absolutely terrifying, I think, for people to realize that they might not know how to get their next meal and that they need to know where the food can come from and how hard you're working to get it to them.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. And it's frustrating and frightening for all of us as we look at this extraordinary need that we're facing. The remnants of what happened in 2008, I ran an agency partnership back during a couple years after the head of the crisis, heart of the crisis, and I still saw so many people who had never accessed food assistance before, but just hadn't been able to go back to work and were forced to, and we're preparing for that. I think psychologically we're going to be in a very similar place, and demand-wise in a very similar place for an extensive period of time. But I will say that we're better prepared in a lot of ways, even though this is so unusual in that Feeding America is providing extraordinary support. We have a strong agency in Feeding Association in Feeding Florida, and everybody is just really on the front line working really hard. I can't tell you how hard our staff has worked over these last weeks in very uncertain times for them personally. But every day showing up and working their hardest to get as much food out as we possibly can.
Sure. 549-2937 to join us. Emily is in Neptune Beach. Hi, Emily. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, Jessica. Thank you. This is Emily. I'm a big fan of the show. It's a pleasure to speak with you this morning.
Thank you.
Melissa.
You too.
So I actually am on my way to work. I am a Publix associate, and I do know that Publix has a really good partnership with Feeding Northeast Florida. And I also work in the bakery, and I know that every night we donate any leftover bread, and I know a produce department does as well, donates it to Feeding Northeast Florida, and they come and pick it up every day. So that's just another way that we're able to give back in the crisis that's going on right now.
Yeah, thank you for that, Emily, and thank you for calling. Susan, that's good to hear, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Publix is an extraordinary partner, and I will tell you that they recently made a financial gift to support our efforts in our purchase program. You know, those associates are heroes, absolute heroes.
Yeah, and they're exposing themselves to disease, and grocery store workers are starting to get sick and some have died. And so it's truly frightening for them to even go into work. So we want to thank everyone who's doing those shifts. Here's an email from Tom up in South Georgia asking me to mention the Camden Hunger Hotline. This is for people in Camden County, Georgia. If you need help in South Georgia, call the Camden Hunger Hotline at 912-409-6920 if you're in Camden County, because they certainly are working as hard as they can as well to help. 549-2937. Jody is at the beaches. Hi, Jody. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, where can people find healthy food? As you know, the World Health Organization has put processed meat in the same category as cigarettes. Are we informing people of the food which can not only help them nourish their body, but also help prevent diseases? So where can people find information regarding healthy food and get that?
Okay, Susan, I know you work very hard to get fresh produce and healthy whole foods to your food banks and food pantries around the area. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect of this?
Yes, absolutely. You know, unfortunately, shelf-stable is the easiest thing for us to handle, and that is certainly processed food. But the boxes that we are distributing include, you know, canned vegetables and canned fruits and some proteins. But in addition, we are handing out fresh produce at every distribution that we do. There isn't a lot of fresh meat, unfortunately, right now in our system. But as the grocery stores are starting to stock a little bit, you know, that the run on the grocery stores has softened a bit, we'll see more of that available, and we will include that in our distribution. So I think over the next few weeks, we will see an increase in a bigger variety. What we're dealing with immediately are those emergency supplies.
Okay. And the run on items at groceries has just been incredible and frankly disturbing to observe, people hoarding items like toilet paper and other things. Can you please explain, we've tried to do this several times already, but once again, let people know how important it is that they only take what they need when they go to the store. Because when everybody hoards, that disrupts the supply chain, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, these purchases are made far, far in advance, you know, based on historical trends. And when we suddenly clear the shelves for a prolonged period of time, you just can't backfill that. But it's going to continue to come. The supply chain isn't broken. It's just disrupted when we take more, buy more than our normal buying patterns are. And to the excess we've had recently, it's very, very difficult to keep those stocks in place. So if we'll all be reasonable about it, the supplies will be restocked and it will be available for everyone. And that's true of meat and toilet paper and cleaning supplies and everything.
Absolutely. And once again, if you need to find a food pantry near you, you need to go to Feeding's website, which is feedingnefl.org. And what's the number again, Susan, for people that don't have internet access to call you?
You know what? You're going to ask me something.
you know what? I had it up here on my laptop, and then I got rid of it. Hang on. Let me do this right now. Because, you know, the digital divide is real. So I just want to make sure that people have the phone number, too. Again, the website is feeding, FEEDINGNEFL.org, or call them. They are at 513-1333, 513-1333. And that's to find, if you go to their homepage, there's a get help button right on the homepage, and you can look and find the nearest food pantry near you. Go get food for free if you are out of work and cannot afford to buy food. If you can donate to Feeding Northeast Florida, go to the website and click the donate button. Be part of their virtual food drive. It's happening right now. No amount too small. But of course, large donations, Susan, would be very welcome at this time, I'm sure. right?
Absolutely. And donations of any size and prayers and support.
Well, Susan King, who heads up Feeding Northeast Florida, you're doing amazing work. And I want to thank you for joining us at this time and getting this information out to everyone. Keep in touch, please. And thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Take care.
Well, a quick break, but in a moment, how Visit Jacksonville is coping with the lack of tourism right now. Plus, how Chinese Americans are being bullied and even attacked in our area because of the pandemic and what we can do to stop it. That's after this.
Electro Lounge is now on Spotify. On the road or at home, take us wherever you go. Just search WJCT 89.9 on Spotify, where the Electro Lounge is always on.
YMCA is offering childcare in a safe environment to our medical community, first responders, and essential employees. Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at 6 locations across the First Coast. It's for kids 5 to 12. Details at fcymca.org.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. The COVID crisis has put Florida's tourism and hospitality industry on pause. That's been devastating for thousands of local jobs and businesses. However, our area's main tourism arm is doing everything they can to pivot to virtual tourism experiences. I spoke about it with Michael Corrigan. He's the CEO of Visit Jacksonville. Let's listen. Michael Corrigan, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
You know, it's no surprise that the tourism and hospitality industries have been hit so hard by this pandemic. What are you seeing in your position at Visit Jacks right now?
Well, obviously, we're seeing, to no one's surprise, a massive slowdown or almost shutdown in the industry. And it starts at the hotels and motels and then continues out into the venues and the restaurants and bars and museums and attractions.
Yeah, I mean, this is
virtually totally shut down.
Right. This is billions of dollars in revenue for our area, and the spring is usually the best time. So the timing couldn't be worse, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, March is the biggest month each year in Jacksonville for tourism. Obviously, this epidemic kind of hit the streets in early March and has really affected March, and the numbers are going to be shockingly reduced when they finally come out in the middle of this month.
Right. And so how does this impact the local economy? You know, we'll recover, but this is a big, big problem for our local and Florida economy. The way that we cannot access all of these typical experiences we have in a state like Florida.
I mean, it's going to be a very long recovery period to get back to the levels we had reached before. We were having record-breaking years each year, and now we're going to basically almost reboot and start over again. So it'll take a long period of time, but the good news is that many of us are so eager to get back out and return to quote-unquote normal that we think we'll see a lot of people want to re-engage the tourism industry once it happens, and that'll be good for those that are hanging, you know, those organizations that are hanging on to make sure we can recover after this is over.
Sure. Now, you want to get some messages out to the public about how they can support the local industry during this crisis. What can people do?
Yeah, when it first started back on the 12th of March, Visit Jacksonville kind of switched from marketing directly outside of Jacksonville and came back in and said, what can we do for the community and what can we do for those in the tourism industry in our community? So at visitjacksonville.com, we created a hashtag and a social media hashtag that is Jacks from Home. So everything that we typically promote about Jacksonville to other communities around the country, we are now doing here locally and trying to help these local businesses stay open by making sure that their marketing message gets out, because many of them have had to cut their budgets. And so Visit Jacksonville wants to make sure that we do our part to support the local businesses, to encourage the local citizens to get out enjoying them. And probably the coolest thing about it is you can actually experience a lot of these places by just going to our website at visitjacksonville.com, because we've got virtual tours of different attractions. We've got 360 videos. We've got live video shots, a lot of things that you're supposed to stay home, but you can actually go see all 840 square miles of Jacksonville by taking a trip through our website.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff on here where you can have kind of an immersive experience without ever leaving your couch, right?
Yeah, exactly, and you can actually set up a plan of what you want to do. You know, once the mayor and the governor tell us that it's okay to go back out and start going places, you can actually set up an itinerary and print it out and have it ready to go. So when you're told to go out and start enjoying it, you'll already have a plan of action and start enjoying things as quickly as possible.
That is what we all want, certainly. So we'll have to hang tough for now. But thank you, Michael Corgan, President and CEO of Visit Jacksonville. Just go to their website, visitjacksonville.com, for more about how we can support the tourism and hospitality industry, and follow the hashtag JacksFromHome and check out their virtual experience hub online. Michael, thanks again.
Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate it.
Well, the pandemic has sparked so many disturbing things, and one of them we want to focus on right now is the uptick in bullying and even violence against Chinese Americans. Reports we're getting of bullying in local schools and on college campuses are very concerning, and a local organization is working to educate the public about why this is dangerous, and we've got to combat it. Leon An is on the line. She's a Chinese-American economics professor at UNF, and she's also part of the Jacksonville Chinese Association. Leon, thanks for being with us.
Hi, it's my great pleasure to participate.
It's so good to have you on the show, and if you have questions about this, give us a call now at 549-2937. And reports of bullying and even attacks against Chinese-Americans have sprung up across the country because people are targeting American citizens out of anger over the way the virus initially began in China. And so this is so alarming to hear about. What incidents have you been documenting in Jacksonville?
Okay, so actually I think this is a very ridiculous act, because now the humankind is facing a common enemy, that is the coronavirus. And the whole world is share the same destiny. And actually, the Jacksonville Chinese community is doing a lot to help the community. For example, the Jacksonville Chinese Association, together with the Artfully Green and PEX Technology, in partnership with the American Homeboy Agriculture Company, we recently have donated 23,000 N95 masks and 14,000 gloves. Together, this amount is about $78,000 to the Baptist Health Hospital. So that is, at this moment, bullying is not good. And all people from different races, from different world, should collectively together to unite it and fight this coronavirus.
Sure. And your association has tracked some incidents in local schools and on the local UNF campus, is that right?
Yes, yes.
And what have you observed or heard about?
So right now we hear that there is a very good momentum in the community, and all the community is shouldering up their responsibilities to help cure all those things and to educate the local people about the virus and how to protect them against it. And some of the Chinese kids are raising the awareness in their schools, such as in Stanton in the Creekside High. They reach out to their teachers to send out the information to raise those donations on behalf of the Baptist House.
Right. But I wanted to also ask you if you've tracked any incidents where Chinese Americans in this area have been attacked or verbally attacked or even physically attacked, because that's what we need to make sure people are aware that this is happening and to speak out against it if they witness anything like this.
Okay, yes. At the very beginning, I myself experienced such an incident. So on one day, I walk on the street with my colleague, who is also a Chinese. We talk about it in Chinese, and then someone come to talk to us and asking us, what language are you speaking? So we tell him it's Chinese, and then said, oh, it's a horrible, do you have Chinese virus? Something like that. So that's not good. That's very insulting.
Sure. And so for young people especially, kids are out of school right now, so they're not having to deal with bullying on the school campus or anything like that. But for young Chinese Americans especially, they can be vulnerable. And so what would you like to say to people listening right now who we've heard this virus called, as you said, by people who are angry at China, the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus? That kind of language can lead to violence against this group of Americans. That's the concern, isn't it?
Exactly. So, yeah, I want to tell those people, actually, this is not good for themselves. When you call those kind of words, you are just ununited effort to fight a virus. And if we're human beings, we cannot get together and collectively fight this virus, and then this virus is going to conquer us. So at this moment, everybody should think about how we can collectively fight the virus together.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Leon Ahn. She is an economics professor at UNF and also part of the Jacksonville Chinese Association. Whether you're Chinese American or not, we want to hear from you. It's 549-2937. And so, you know, we've heard anecdotal reports of people of Asian descent wearing sunglasses when they go outside, trying to actually disguise themselves. They're worried about their safety. The FBI has been reporting that Chinese and Asian Americans are now experiencing increased hate crimes due to the outbreak. There was a stabbing incident in Texas. There have been incidents in New York, other states. This is simply a climate of xenophobia that we have to speak out against, because with everything that we're worried about, this is something that might not seem at the top of mind for people when you're just worried about your own family, your own bills. But Asian Americans need to be able to live their lives without the fear of being bullied, harassed, or assaulted. And so they need allies right now. What are some ways, Leon, that people can be allies to the local Asian community in this crisis?
So I think the best way is that everybody participates in the campaign to fight this virus. So at this moment, the hospitals are in urgent need of the PPE, the personal protective equipment. So if everyone join in this effort to help raise or donate some, such as even a small piece of sanitizers to the hospitals, this will be great. And then I believe the peoples from different races and countries will be allies together.
Okay. And so how can people learn more about the effort that the Jacksonville Chinese Association is making to get the PPE, the personal protective equipment, to healthcare workers right now? How can they be part of this?
Okay. So I think they can directly visit the website or Facebook page of Baptist Health. And the Baptist Health is now calling for urgent donations to the hospital. So they can visit their webpage. And then they can also visit the Jacksonville Chinese Association webpage. And if they want to be in partnership with us, donate to us through us, and we can collectively collect all those items together and send it to the Baptist House. And we have the website. If they just simply Google search Jacksonville Chinese Association, they can find the information there.
Okay, and as we speak with Leon Ahn of the Jacksonville Chinese Association, we're talking about how the way the coronavirus has upended American life for all of us. But if you're Chinese American, you face a double threat. Not only are they worried about avoiding the virus, they are contending with a huge spike in verbal and physical attacks. This is also affecting other Asian Americans who are from other countries or descend from people that originally hailed from other countries. This is just so unacceptable. Asian Americans afraid to go out, go on a bus or to the grocery store to let their kids go outside, you know, being spit on, being attacked. We wanted to raise awareness about this. So let's go to Les in Ortega. Les, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for this topic. I just wanted to provide support for the lady and her nationality. I think this is a good time for the human race to just buck up and look at this as an adult situation. This is not a Chinese situation. This is not an American situation. This is a human versus viral situation. I'll take my comments, your comments off the air.
Thank you so much, Les. That's right. This virus affects all human beings, Leon, and we have to keep that in mind, don't we?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and so the website, if you want to check out the Jacksonville Chinese Association's website and support their efforts, go to usjca.org, usjca.org. It's in American, or excuse me, English, American, English and Chinese. So you need to be aware of that. Right, Leon?
Yes, yes. So they can contact us through the website, and we can join the campaign together and outlet together to fight the coronavirus, to protect our frontline doctors and nurses and all those medical staff.
Okay, let's take one more call. It's Michelle in Ponte Vedra. Looks like someone's trying to call you, Leon. Michelle, you're on the air. Go ahead. Oh, Michelle, you're on the air. Hi, Michelle.
Oh, yes. Hi, Melissa. I'm just calling because I wanted to, I feel very strongly that we need the President of the United States and our Governor Ron DeSantis to step up and condemn these racist comments that are being made and the acts of violence, whether verbal or physical, against Chinese and Chinese Americans. And I think it's outrageous that our leadership isn't taking some responsibility for this.
Michelle, thanks for that. Well, we cannot control what the political class does, but we can certainly try to highlight it on this program. So again, people need to be aware that this climate of bigotry and xenophobia is simply unacceptable. And you can support the Jacksonville Chinese Association and their efforts to donate PPE equipment to Baptist Health and other hospitals by going to usjca.org. Leon on the line for us, and she rearranged her schedule to be with us today. So Leon, I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. It's my great pleasure.
Thank you so much. Leon is a professor at UNF and also representing for us today the Jacksonville Chinese Association. Thanks so much. And in a moment, Cole Pepper will call in with a little bit of news about the NFL draft. No surprise, it will be done remotely this year. That's next.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. As the coronavirus pandemic continues, scientists are trying to learn more about how the virus is spread, and there are different theories about whether COVID-19 will come and go with the seasons. We'll have that, and we'll hear from former White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta about how the president is handling the crisis. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Yeah. It started as an idea over coffee back in January. Why not make a dashboard mapping all the data of COVID-19 cases?
I'm thinking, yes, why not?
The tiny team at Johns Hopkins University never dreamed it would become so popular.
It just didn't even cross our mind.
Mapping coronavirus around the world this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The luxury train Orange Blossom Special inspired an iconic Florida song in the 1930s. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk about the song Orange Blossom Special. As we self-quarantine for the coronavirus, we'll remember the yellow fever epidemic of 1888. That and more on Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Outside of New York, more states are being hit hard by the coronavirus outbreak, including Illinois and Louisiana. Both report massive racial disparities, and those working for and inside local correctional facilities have much higher infection rates than those on the outside. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, the lines that connect Chicago to New Orleans, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, could the Jaguars draft a quarterback in the first round?
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The NFL draft is coming up. Cole Pepper has a look ahead at that and some other sports news and notes. Hey, Cole, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, a week from Thursday, the NFL draft begins. The first 3 days it will be held virtually, as we have discussed. It'll be basically a series of conference calls and Zoom press conferences that will be taking place in a unique setting in this day and age in the National Football League. But one of the things that probably has not been discussed as much as it should be is the Jaguars need a quarterback, and if indeed there is one. Of course, they've traded away Nick Foles. They have Gardner Minshew installed as the starter for now. And if you ask the man on the street, the average Jaguars fan, they would say it's absolutely Minshew. Let's go ahead and he's the guy. However, I think that because Minshew was a sixth-round pick last year, there is still a thought that maybe the Jaguars aren't as sold on Minshew as a lot of fans are. And with two picks in the first round and three in the top 42, the Jaguars might just pull the trigger on a quarterback. It depends how it all plays out. There are three quarterbacks who are expected to go in the top 10, including the number one pick, likely to be Joe Burrow, the highest trophy winning quarterback from LSU. The former Alabama quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, who is likely to go somewhere in the top five, and then Justin Herbert of Oregon, because there have been a couple of different mock drafts recently that have Herbert falling to the Jaguars, either the Jaguars trading up to 7 to get him or staying number 9 and being able to draft him in the top 10. This could be a very interesting thing to follow throughout the course of the draft to see if the Jaguars do go for a quarterback. Whether they go at number 9 or at 20 or somewhere else remains to be seen. And I think I discussed this a couple of weeks ago after the conference call that we had with Doug Marone to discuss what he thought his roster looked like right now. One of the questions I asked was, do you want to have a veteran quarterback in place in addition to Gardner Minshew? The other quarterback that Jaguars have on the roster right now is Josh Dobbs, not a very experienced guy. And he said, yeah, you usually like to have a veteran as the backup, as sort of the another voice in the room to talk with a young quarterback like Gardner Minshew. They don't have that right now, so we'll see if they go out and try to add another quarterback at some point in the draft.
And for people that want to follow the draft, what will the virtual experience be like, do you think?
It's a great question. It's interesting to see some of the shows that have been typically studio shows have done things like we saw Saturday Night Live this past weekend do it where different cast members were shooting parts of sketches and sketches from inside of their homes. We've seen the news programs shoot from inside homes. I've done some sports anchoring from my house on Channel 4, as others have. So I think it's going to certainly look different. It will not be the pomp and circumstance we've seen in the past with the big crowds and the draft pick coming out from the backstage area to be congratulated by the commissioner, Roger Goodell. I think it's going to feel like a much more sterile situation and maybe more clinical and in some ways more practical, but it certainly won't have the same kind of experience that DraftKings have had in the past.
Sure. And sports in general, you know, for sports fans, this is just a really tough time. You recently flagged a Sports Illustrated piece that predicted we could be without professional sports for over a year. Is that really what people are looking at right now?
I think it's a possibility. And again, as I said in the past, anybody who tells you they know how this is all going to wrap up is probably selling you something. But the fact that you have professional leagues talking about getting back to business, you have the president talking about the NFL starting on time in September with the regular season. If there's no vaccine, the article that was written does bring up the point about how can you expect fans to come out in great numbers to watch these events if every time they do that, they're either A, putting themselves at risk, or B, putting themselves at risk of picking out, you know, contracting the virus and then passing it on to somebody else. And I think the expectation is that as, you know, we get past the crest of this thing, it's likely we're going to see people be a little bit more casual with the quarantining and the self-isolation and the social distancing. And you can't really social distance very well when you've got 70,000 people in the stadium and the seats are right there. And you know, our team's going to sell one out of every four seats in the area or surround people who are social distancing by sitting there. I don't see that happening. So I think there's a huge question right now as to when professional sports, major college sports and the like are going to get back to any kind of experience with games and competitions going on the field.
Last but not least, you want to mention the XFL Football League has fallen to the coronavirus, too.
And before they ever got their season going again, so you have the XFL and the AAF, the Alliance of American Football, both trying to become supplemental leagues to the National Football League and not getting it going. I feel terrible for the people who are involved in getting the league going. When you have all the effort that it takes to get a new league started. You have a lot of jobs involved with this, a lot of places around the country. People who want you either have been working in other sports leagues decided to take the leap and be a part of this. Vince McMahon, the owner of the World Wrestling Entertainment, is the guy who got this going again. You may recall that the XFL about a decade ago started in a very different way. This is going to be more of an experiment to see how they could change the game.
We always so appreciate your insights into the world of sports. He's Cole Pepper. He is still covering the sports news on Channel 4 every night from his home. Follow him on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Keep flattening the curve. We'll see you at 9 a.m. Tuesday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.